submitter is Warren Hayes. Good morning and welcome. We've read the original submission that you lodged, so you don't need to reread that to us, but you're very welcome to speak to your submission and stress the key points that you want to take on board.
Fine, thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. I'm Warren Hayes. I'm a fourth generation farmer on our family farm. The land there is trust owned by two family trusts, and I farm on my own. In the past, I've been a student at Telford. I worked on a farm at Clydevale for a year, and apart from those 2 years, I've spent the other 45 years of my life on the family farm. In the past 5 or so years, I've been a beef and lamb demonstration farmer, and I've also just tidying up the last of the trial work with the Pirindale New Zealand progeny trial with the South Island side of that. Our farm is approximately 890 hectares, we're 10 kilometres east of Wyndham. I describe it as being on the northernmost tip of the Catlins Forest Park, although there is a few gaps in there in the bush, as you can see on the map over there. So if you look over from Edendale, we're on the just directly to the right of Edendale. Yeah, down a wee bit. Just up just a little bit. Oh, sorry, to your right. And down. Left up a little bit. About there. Just in that sort of corner there. You can actually see, yep, right where the pointer is, just slightly to the right is my house. Okay. And we go to the right, the long straight edge on the bush is our back boundary.
Okay.
The altitude of the farm ranges with an average of approximately 280 odd metres. We range with two paddocks, an altitude of about 60 metres, right up to approximately 400 metres at the top of the farm. That's what I describe as rolling hill country. There is a lot of gullies in it, and I'm not asking you to, but if you zoom in a lot closer, you'll see that in the past it's been fenced in the paddocks where it's much easier to fence. A lot of our farm is impractical to fence around the gullies. You can see I've got a small area of pine trees there where that paddock's just straight out impractical to cultivate. That's my neighbours, that one. It's a very long farm. We're exposed to the south, but also have about half of the farm to the north. You want me to drive that, do you? Okay. How do we zoom out?
Yeah,
that's better. So, and just reading, making my notes up a wee bit as I go. We have, on that 890 hectares, we have approximately 40 hectares of Kiri 2 bush and open space covenants. This block here is all completely fenced off. The fence comes through there to be practical, and same through there. Being quite exposed, we do need the gullies for shelter. And to talk about, just briefly, about the farm I worked on at Clydevale, all the gullies up there had been fenced off, and there was a huge gorse problem in those gullies. I remember spending days with knapsacks on my back spraying gorse up there. I do have a gorse problem. I just sprayed 25 hectares a few weeks ago, and that's probably done half of what I need to do on the farm. Yeah. And that's been inherited around about 30 odd years ago. My parents bought the neighbouring block of 900 acres, and it was very run down. We've refenced a lot of it. We cultivate, we grow winter crop. We run about 5,500 ewes currently. I've reduced that stocking rate a wee bit over the last few years. And 120 beef cows, and I winter graze approximately 600 cows. That number's variable during the years, and we're pretty self-contained. Probably the things that I want to talk about a little bit is just one or two of the rules as we go.
Yep.
And just my thoughts and the reasoning behind what I've put in there. Mm-hmm. And some of it I think is very good in the plan, and you'll notice that I agree with some of them, with some of the bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. Rule 20, I think that area needs to become smaller. There's no generational or intergenerational probably contact on a 50 hectare block or a 20 hectare block or a 5 hectare block. So down the track, who knows where those tile drains are. I think I could probably show where every drain is at home of Nova Flow without having a map or anything like that. I know. We've worked with Environment Southland in the past with Nathan Cruikshank of what I can and can't put an overflow in. There's been one or two spots. There's a spot over in here. I was quite keen to drain in that paddock there when it was gone by the last. That photo's about 7 or 8 years old, I would think. 6, 7 years old. We looked at draining in there because it would have enabled us to bring the tractor down over the hill, but he said it was too steep, and that photo would show the same, that hasn't been cultivated in. So that's my concern, is that small farms need to be treated the same as big farms. They need to be able to do stuff that we're being expected to do in the same veins in that one. In Rule 23, I think my concern is probably like a lot of other large landholding businesses where you're looking at the 50 hectares total cultivation. This year I've got approximately 80 hectares cultivated. A small area of fodder beet, there's about 5 hectares there. The rest of it's split about 50-50 between kale and Swedes, with the kale being for the dairy cows and the Swedes being for my stock, although there are some dairy cows on that this year too, due to a poor yield up in the higher country that I have. I remember coming here 2 years ago to the very first of the early meetings, and there was 15% was being talked about. And on that, what I'm cropping this year, I come in at about 9% of the total landowner. To me, that's a fairer option than 50 hectares. Like if I had 100 hectares, I could cultivate 50 hectares of that. That's 50% of the farm with the associated issues that go with it. The slope is also one that I find an issue. I've left patches in the paddocks this year, and I'm getting questions from my neighbours why I've left them. It's often rockier pieces at home, but it is often the steep bits too that we've started to leave. I do have worries about what's going to happen with that ground, with pests being a harbour for pests for the crops and stuff like that, with the longer grass. That grass just collapses. It's got no feed value at the end of the winter, and to be honest, it's going to get cultivated at the end of it when it goes back into grass. I also remember back at the first meeting that I came to here a couple of years ago that I actually asked the question of where the 20 degrees came from, and evidently it came out of the Lincoln Farm Technical Manual from, it would be at least 12 years ago now. And my tractors use jewels. I don't have jewels on the front. I've only had one tractor accident, and that was my fault. It was a wet paddock and slipped off into a gully. We do our best. We work to best practice where we possibly can, and that's pretty much all the time. All the dairy cows are fenced out of the gullies. I do run a temporary water type scheme out of the cracks to do my best there. My beef cows are extensively grazed in older paddocks in the winter. And it's the same with my ewes in the winter. I don't, unless they're on crop, the 4-day wintering has become fashionable in the last probably 5 or 6 years. We've been practicing at home for over 20 years now. And we really see it in the soil. There's no pugging, there's no big muddy spots that you have to sort out. And it's amazing the amount of grass with it not being trampled in that regrows over the winter, and that you can get a second grazing off in the winter. And that sort of probably leads me to the Rule 25 as well, with the width of setback and stuff. Mm. For me, it's too wide. It's impractical. It would cost my farming business a huge amount of money with winter crop. I had a quick workout last night, actually, and the value of winter grazing to me this year is going to be approximately $170,000. And to have the creeks in the middle of the paddock, they're going to be fenced off 20 metres back, takes out tens, twenties, maybe $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 out of my income. Because as you can see in those photos, you can see the fence lines, you can see how it's fenced around the gullies. And the associated gorse problem that would come with setbacks and fencing. Yeah. I hate spraying gorse, it's dead money. It's worse than a mortgage. I think, to be honest, for what Dad paid for the farm next door, we're probably halfway to what he paid for it and what I've spent in gorse control on it in the last 25 years. I think, and that's the one that's the practicalities of what we can do. I'm at the other end of the scale from Mr. Gardine. I'm at the top of the hill with everything. The only creek that I have that would flow wider than a meter, would be the Mummy Hill Stream, and that portion there is us against the Mummy Hill River. The portion from here to here is fenced off with three wires from when it was in winter crop there. That's a really gorsy wee corner. But even this creek here is this wide at the bottom where it flows into the river. And all that's, it's all gorse down through here. There's a big gorsy face in around here. All that's gorse. This paddock here, it's all smaller gorse. It's been sprayed, but I like to think that I'm trying to do the best that I possibly can. And by excluding especially the dairy cows in the winter. After our winter grazing, we get in with a very heavy duty cultivator, and we try to rip our clay level is about here. Some parts of the farm, the rock's right at the surface. But we try to rip to the surface of the clay to improve that soil, to break up that pan at the top a little bit where we can. Our cultivator is on shear bolts, and to give you an idea of what we have to deal with, we break approximately 200 shear bolts a year on that cultivator. It's still cheaper than the interest on a new one with springs. We have a very varied farm, but it's rolling country. It's a lot of it's impractical fence. I say to people, Granddad spent his life knocking down the bush on the farm, which I can remember all the block from there through there into there, out there, something like that. I can remember that all being fallen bush. And I can remember fires at home that you could see from Invercargill when Dad and Granddad were burning the big windrows of logs. There's a patch in this paddock here. All the logs had just been bulldozed into the gully because back then that's what you did. And get them out of the paddocks as much as you can. Well, we've tidied up that creek. It's fenced along the back. It's got potential for fencing across the front, I think, but there's a load of sticks that have come out of there, and I think that needs to be sorted out first. Like this gully up through here is the same. It's all filled up with logs. That's one of my next paddocks to cultivate. This paddock's never been cultivated in my lifetime. It's been levelled after the bulldozers and hand sown. That's too steep there to get around on a tractor. That's some of that's pretty borderline in there too. And I think that paddock's going to have to be refenced before I do any cultivation in there. But as part of it, I'd like to extend what I did down there and improve the gully system up through here by removing those logs out of there and hopefully improving the soil flow through. A lot of those logs now are getting blocked up and the creeks are starting to run back on the surface, and it's creating a stock hazard too. This block here is Kerry 2, and a large portion of this block of bush here is in Kerry 2. These two blocks here we brought from a small neighbour about 12 years ago now, and they're both earmarked to be fenced off into open space covenants as well. It's just a matter of being able to get the cash flow to be able to do it. And I think as people become more environmentally aware, I think the queue is getting bigger and bigger for that limited pool of resources that the Kerry 2 Trust has. So I guess it's the slope and the fencing that's the big one for me. I think I'm worried that there'll be a bigger increase between the urban and rural divide. Like, we have to do this, but when I've looked at the maps and seen the water quality maps and see that a lot of that poor quality water is below the towns. If you go and look at the Mummy Hill Bridge monitoring site, that water is very clean. And I'm worried that the divide's just going to become bigger. I'm also worried about consents, I suppose. because to date there's no information about whether I'm going to be able to get a whole farm consent for 10 or 15 years, or if I'm going to have to do it year by year at a huge cost. I don't have the expertise to do consents. I see that as an added burden again. And I guess the big one for me is I want to be able to hand my farm on to my children and in as good a condition as possible. I'm not there to farm and sell it out when I retire. I'm there for the next generation and the generations after that. And I think probably the big one for it is if I have to fence off all the creeks and gullies, I have to put in a water scheme too at extra cost. Right now I've got shelter in the gullies. There's no tussock on the property, but I've got shelter in the gullies. I'm trying to eradicate the gorse problem, but it does provide shelter on days like this too, especially when you're shearing like I am. That's pretty much me in a nutshell and my thoughts.
Excellent, thank you very much. I'll just see if we have questions for you. That was a fairly full and clear discussion of the issues raised in your submission, but I'll just check if there's any matters we need to clarify.
Thank you. Yes, thanks very much, Warren. That was very useful again. What about dead sheep? We haven't talked about that much before, but if you don't have your creeks fenced off and sheep die there, what do they do from time to time?
Well, you've got livestock, you've got dead stock.
Yeah, so how do you deal with that?
We have our own disposal hole at home, and we pick them up as soon as we possibly can and drag them out. We've got a couple of long ropes that we can tie together on four wheelers to drag out. Everything's removed as soon as we possibly can and we find it. Our offal hole at home is in clay. It's on the side of the hill. I can actually show you where it is. Where are we? You can actually see the clay pile from the last one that was dug, I think, there. So it's pretty central on the farm. The hole is they've all been in the same areas for the last 20 odd years. It's clay and the digger can only go until it hits rock at about 8 to 10 metres. Yeah. And as they fill up, we just move on and dig another one.
Yeah. Okay, thanks very much. There's another few notes about what your concerns are, so that's very useful. Thanks.
Cool.
You look, any clarification required?
Not really. I think, thank you, Mr. Hay, it's very clear. Just, well, Greg's clarifying, are you at the top of the catchment, did you say?
Yeah, the Mummerhill River, I guess I'm probably halfway in the catchment. Wyndham's just slightly to the left of the mouse. The Mummerhill River comes up through here. It divides about there and turns into the Wairakeke River. I'm sure Mr. Rodway's familiar with up there. And it comes up through this way here, and up into that's a Rainier Forest block up in there. There's a north branch, I think I've got it right, and there's a south branch flows up through this way into the Ponchos here.
Thank you.
No, thanks, Warren. That's an excellent presentation.
Just one. I see in your evidence, you've commented on Rule 20, you want to move reference to intensive winter grazing, is that correct?
Yeah, it's probably because in Southland, intensive grazing is a common practice. Like, intensive winter grazing means if I put my hoggets into a paddock and divide it up, it's become intensive. I suspect down the track that some people will see it, that they do more permanent fencing and that doesn't become, it's the same thing, but it's not intensive grazing because it's paddock to paddock grazing. Like our average paddock size at home is probably 8 to 10 hectares. I think there's around about 90 odd paddocks on the farm of varying sizes. A lot of it's fenced to accommodate slope and also for ease of fencing in the blocks where we're done. We're dividing paddocks down where we can, trying to get that average size down to where the paddocks are more manageable. And it works better with us for our 4-day shifts in the winter.
So if I can just take that, it would be clearer for you if that was a little bit clearer in the plan.
Yeah.
What that actually referred to.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The references that it refers to, is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you.
There's no real definition of, I guess it's probably leading towards, there's no real definition in the plan of stock that you own and farm normally compared to stock that come in for winter grazing as well, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yep, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. That's been very clear and very helpful.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.